listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
See ya.
And me, Brian. And of the three of us, I'm putting all my money on Dwayne because I'm not sure how much me and Niall have recovered from Kitacon still. I know physically I haven't.
Yeah, sure.
Because I had to come home from work after my shoulder went sprawling about an hour in from work today.
Ooh.
So it all went fantastically based off what I've seen.
Yes. And all the anime I've watched since then, and the anime I watched during and before, all seems like some sort of weird dream. So how much I remember accurately remains to be seen. But let us start with the thing which, of course, is deliberately most like a weird dream. It is somebody's weird dream. It's Picotaro's Lullaby, Episode 3, Jack and the Beanstalk. No question here as to whether I've heard of this story or not.
Why are you famously known to hear of it? Or
no.
I guess it's just a well-known enough one.
It's just well-known, yes. We're out of Aesop, we're into whoever.
Grimm, I think.
Is it Grimm?
Fairy Tales? I could be wrong about that.
I do.
Yeah. Oh. But again, even their stuff, they were just assembling stories which were around and about before them anyway. Into one nice place. So in this version of Jack and the Beanstalk, there's a guy climbing up this beanstalk.
Jack, presumably.
Presumably. We don't think we get a name.
No.
On the way down, though, with a chest full of treasure strapped to his back, is Picotaro. And he's assuring this guy that he should turn back because, hey, there's nothing up there. It's just a wasteland. Nothing to see. Don't worry about it.
It's all garbage. It's just like banana peels and stuff.
I brought this with me, you know, even when I go to the shops. It's in my favorite stuff.
No, I always have this.
Also, it's really tricky climbing down the way he's climbing down, which is face first.
So yeah, and they kind of meet halfway, and it's like, would you mind going back down and I'll climb back up? And it's like, no, it's way harder to climb up, dude. I don't know. The way I'm climbing down, it's very difficult.
And when this guy won't go, he just starts throwing rocks at him.
it goes very politely until the rock throwing, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of where it loses it.
And then when the guy leaves, he then goes...
Comments to his desk.
Yeah. He then climbs backwards up into the clouds, telling somebody off screen that he got rid of another one.
I think is the thing in it that he's in on the fairy tale, because in the grasshopper and the ant one, he was living in the ant's house with the ant.
Yeah, I think so, because I think the idea is that the animator has read him the real fairy tale just before they go to sleep.
And he's inserted himself into
this is him remixing what he heard in his dream.
Okay.
I think this was the best one so far because this one, it didn't feel like there was one joke which I was missing.
Yeah.
And he's laughed out loud a couple of times at it, so that's most I've laughed since.
Like, I knew that the treasure chest was going to come up as a thing, so you're just kind of waiting for that joke to drop, which is pretty good, yeah.
Next up, Bono Bono, Episode 8. We are talking Everybody Sleeps Outside.
Talking about things that made me laugh out loud. This episode also.
This is one of the things which I can't... I know I watched.
Okay.
Crunchyroll tells me I watched it. But the details of which, beyond them all piled up on top of each other in the middle of two trees.
It starts with Raccoon talking about a waterfall, and Bono can't possibly picture what it is because he's like, he thinks it's just a lump of water in the sky that falls all of a sudden. And then Raccoon says, no, it's a river that falls. It's like, a river can't fall, idiot, it's on the ground. So Raccoon decides to take them to show them a waterfall, and they have to spend the night camping out, I suppose. And Bono's very excited to be, as Raccoon says, staying over at a friend's house. I mean, like, that's the equivalent for a woodland animal, I suppose.
Yeah. Don't they all sleep outside, though?
Well, yeah, they do. Bono sleeps in the ocean. He, as they say, it's like raccoons, like the best place to sleep is a tree. But Bono can't climb a tree, so they sleep between two trees, because that's a good middle ground.
Mm. But the big thing here is Bono is getting so excited about it. It's okay. Yeah, we're going to sleep here. Says,
no, calm down. We're going to sleep.
Okay, we've all eaten dinner. We're all like, you know, settling down. Bono, nice and relaxed. Oh, yeah, nice and relaxed. Okay, is everybody go to bed now?
It's just so excited by the prospect of it. Yeah, and I think most of my laughter came from their being asleep and their various little habits that they have.
Are you moving something around there, Dwayne?
Oh, sorry, I must have hit a wire there. Okay.
So I can hear a lot of clonking your end.
Sorry.
Okay, yeah, I remember the punchline, I think. It was the punchline, or was there a post? The bit where they wake up at the end and raccoons covered in leaves, but the other two aren't.
Yeah, so he puts the leaves on them sleeping to see how he ended up covered in leaves in their sleep. They just put it on raccoon.
So he kicks them.
Yeah, he's like, don't put your trash on me. Those are the good bits where raccoon's scratching himself in the night and Chipmunk is smiling to himself and scratching raccoon also.
What's he doing about, I wonder?
yeah. Just you get some sort of weird little personal insight to them, I suppose. It's nice. It's fun.
It's kind of like, you know, hey, like, you know, it's kind of after the kids at home, you're going over to stay at your friend's house, don't be apprehensive about it. You're all friends, you're all sleeping in the same place. It's all nice and quiet and peaceful.
And it continues next week with episode 9, Waterfalls Are Amazing.
My gosh.
Spoilers, I guess they're amazing.
Or amazing in what way?
Yeah.
And it'd be amazingly dangerous.
Okay, next up is Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 46, Farewell Kanigasaki, in which we get the end of the retreat. Hideyoshi's plan pays off. The guy with the giant sword gets killed.
Is he actually dying?
Well, wounded. Gravely wounded, at least.
They seem to pull him out, but that might be their way of killing off characters in this show. We don't know yet.
I think he's dead. I think this is where he died.
I did like his reaction. Like, it's one of the few jokes where it's like, who would have known that a tube that makes a magic boom noise could pierce human skin from a distance? He's like, everyone's like, that's not how guns work.
Well, it's the narrator says, when he says it's magic, and the narrator goes, no.
I thought that was his own soldiers going like, it's not magic, dude. But you get Chidori being badass and fucking coming at him with broken swords and just really messing up his legs.
And her getting messed up as well in the process.
She's
beaten and bloody by the end of it, which is...
Like one with like giant fists just kind of smash her head like into the ground and then he throws her over his shoulder. Pretty brutal.
Except she got back up again after that. She did, yeah, because she's pretty badass. But obviously it was kind of a thing of, they're not going to be able to get out of this until the reinforcements finally arrive.
Indeed.
Your man kind of berating himself, saying, it's like, oh, shit, I said they're on their last legs, but now they got reinforcements.
Yeah.
And he's reminded.
This means he had a good kind of moment there, thanks to all that, kind of not time to fill the load rifle name, but it's like, fun, Danny Glover needs a weapon too. It's been revoked.
he gets really excited about the idea of guns. It's like, wait a minute, these are really useful.
It's Tokugawa who shows up, who continues to be the cheeriest person in the series. He always seems so happy in every...
Is it War Great?
Yes.
It mentions that Hideyoshi will thank him years later, and I'm like, is he going to thank him by stabbing him or something? Because...
No.
I was wondering, was it a sarcastic thank, or was it like,
Train of Mind, like lines.
Okay.
They will eventually turn on each other.
Eventually.
I figured that's why I figured it was like, ooh, is that like, he'll thank him. Thank you for your service. Kabam.
I think it was a genuine thank you before they were at
odds. Oh, it was a thank you at the time. Yeah, sure.
Don't worry about this.
Oh dear.
Anyways, they've escaped. We haven't lost any of our main Nobunaga side characters just yet. So
it's another 14 years before they'll turn on each other.
Oh dear.
At which point, by that point, Nobunaga is dead, so.
The show will probably be ended by that stage.
I assume so, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it'll have a sequel with Tokugawa. But I guess not, because he's not really being a super main character. He just like shows up to say, look at this guy. You know who this guy is, don't you, Japan? You know what he's going to do.
This is like a Punch and Judy thing where because they know the outcome, kind of.
It is, kind of, yes. I think that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy with the big sword died 1570, so I'm guessing that was him getting killed.
Oh, fuck, okay. So that's our first on screen death, is it?
I believe so, yes.
No, fucking Imagawa got bottled on the battlefield, remember?
Oh,
yeah, you're right.
And I'm going to guess. So Yoshinari dies in 1570 as well. He died fighting the Asakura clan, so yeah, I assume we just won't see him again.
Oh dear.
I don't think we saw him die in action. He was the really vain one of the early starting characters.
They've just been slowly sidelining him until he's dead.
Quite possibly, yes.
Oh, dear.
Okie doke. Right, on to the full-length shows. First up, Magical Circle Guru Guru, Episode 6. A rival appears, Yondor Village. An episode 17 minutes in where I thought, oh, that must be the end. But no, another episode's worth of material still happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that episode felt pretty quick. Check the timeline. I was like, wait a minute, there's loads left in this.
Yeah. So this episode is mainly introducing the character of Raid, who is a demon prince who's not entirely evil. He's not entirely good either.
He looks at Chidori and he's like, well, she's like a dark mage, so that's like halfway here. So I should probably try and recruit her.
He's kind of like, the henchman you always have on the villain side who has some sense of honor, and maybe you might turn him around to an ally later on in the series, or he'll die in a very noble way.
Except this guy has his magic is very, very goofy. It involves doing really stupid dances.
That's probably why they eventually converted it to drawing a circle on the ground. It's more cool.
Yes, quite possibly. Because that might tie into Old Man North North, as I believe they translated his name as. Kitta Kitta. How his dancing relates to the Guru Guru. And we see him in the shadows in this episode because there's a dance contest.
But he doesn't get to take part because, we've already assigned first place. We don't want to see that guy dancing.
He's just waiting backstage. I thought I saw him wander away. Oh, maybe not. I couldn't even name him. Why would he be here?
Now is my time to shine. It's like, no, nobody likes you.
Because this Yondor village has been cursed by a demon to make everybody run around with
them. They flail their arms and legs constantly.
Yeah,
and
I assume it's supposed to be a joke of RPG villages of occupied by.
Oh,
villages.
Like the guys with. Yeah, where they just have the two static animations that
they just follow a little path. In the village constantly, yeah.
I did like the mayor having them like giving them tea and explaining the situation and just making a mess of everything. It was pretty great.
Slapping Nikkei in the face, pouring tea all over cookery.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing of it is it's like, well, we're all cursed to move constantly, so might as well have a dance contest. It's like, I think that's like a bad idea.
So they fire the demon who tries to make cookery do a saucy dance.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was in the original anime as well. So
I know, but they could have done better by cutting it out or something. It was weird.
it was a novel because as soon as I saw, okay, kabam, like Nikkei, you're gonna like be frozen stock, slum and smoke clears, and then kabam. And while a smoke cloud was there on screen, I thought, this is going to be something lewd, isn't it? I know it is. And it was.
Yeah.
It was less lewd in the original cartoon, but I don't know how lewd it was. And it was less lewd than the joke they stuck in previously. But the joke is more Nikkei's reaction to it of not wanting him to dispel the magic until he's also got an eyeful.
Yeah, he manages to corner his way through because of horniness, yes. I guess. Yeah,
yes. He unfreezes himself. Yeah, he breaks out of paralysis because he's so horny. How does he defeat the demon in the end? I can't remember.
I think Kukuri just summons the powered up version of that fire snake and it just eats him again,
Is it that or is it sleep?
I feel like he just gets eaten. I could be wrong about that. Because he's like, wait, what? It's like he didn't think he was going to be taken out that easily.
Anyway, he beats the demon and the curse is broken.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then they give him back. It's another one of the awards that they're given that they don't want. I think we've brushed over a bronze statue.
Just immediately sells it.
Like, he sells it straight away and it's like, the guy can't take this, but he basically threatens the guy. It's like, fucking take this. I don't want it. And it kept coming up that the mayor was happened to be passing by that stall. It's like, that's that statue of me cursed. That was a gift.
Because they're mad at them because they've asked them to leave the village.
Because she's a dark mage and guru and shit. Yeah.
Yes. But eventually they apologize and they help them out when they have to fight Raid.
I didn't think they were helping out that well.
They fill in all these holes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's not going to help in the immediate thing. I mean, like, that's great for afterwards when you have a bunch of holes near your town that are just a hazard. I mean, like, some of them have nice things on the bottom, but,
And Kukuri throws away all the reward money into this pond.
Because there's a legend that you get your wish if you throw away all your fortune.
And which does work. It gives her another Guru spell. Draws another circle, and it summons... What are they called?
All those little dancing elves that we've seen all the time.
Can't do it right, little guys. Basically, like three little men who will dance around your head and throw off your concentration.
Yes.
You can't do anything properly.
Like, even make threats, it turns out. You can't even make a threat properly.
Yeah, it just comes out as nonsense kind of thing.
I think it was something like, a new cookery. It's like, next time we meet, my size will be a boxed lunch for children. No, I came out wrong.
That was supposed to be really cool.
It was the point at which we saw Raid looking like, oh, he's going to do something to them next episode, and then it turned out, no, next episode is straight away.
Is now.
Yes.
We don't have time.
They patted in there. I didn't even need to go over the end credits this time either.
It's the fact they've announced new ending credit music. And I'm like, when are they ever going to get to play it?
Well, they play the music, but you never see the ending animation or anything.
But yeah, still, it's a great. This is currently 26 episodes into the original TV series.
Yeah, I mean, like it's kind of kicking Dragon Ball Kai's ass. Packing that shit in.
They've skipped entire episodes worth of material. I don't know whether that material was filler in the original.
Okay, they might be just adapting the comic or whatever.
Yeah, when they went from continent to continent in the original TV series, there was a bunch of stuff happening on the boat. Whereas in this, it was like, get on the boat, get off the boat.
And we're there.
Yeah.
That's loading screen done.
Yeah, they didn't even have actual animation. It's just like, here's like the game, like map screen, over, and we're done.
I do like that in the end, in the next episode previews, where you see the overworld recap of the plot, just to show you how quick a pace it's going through, you know? Yeah.
Next up, I've got Haybot down here. Have they got the episode down here on Crunchyroll to tell me what it was called? The answer is no. This had a bunch more of the behind-the-scenes story. So we see a grayscale, Nejiru and another Haybot. And they're with the villainess of the series. And apparently this Haybot, which is Zero, and Zero's been referred to various times in the series by her and other people, doesn't have a soul, and the princess is saying, oh, she wants to put her soul into this so she could be closer to this other Nedjeru. And then we see three of the giant screws that we saw one of in the very original series. And they talk about the originator. And then it goes into the main story, which is back with the normal band of idiots, where something is causing all of the ridges to disappear from screws. And then eventually also from screw holes. And so the entire episode is Peckett and Haybot arguing over whether a screw without a ridge is still a screw or whether it is now a nail.
Of course.
I would say it would be a bolt.
Yes,
right?
That's what the narrator says at the end of the episode. Or somebody. Okay. Somebody. Oh, not the narrator. I believe it's the smart ass robot from the MoCath trio.
I guess I'm the smart-ass robot from that trio, then.
Yes.
Hooray.
At the end, he says, technically speaking, it'd be more like a bolt or something. He gives another thing as well, and they both hit him for being a smart-ass. But by the end, they have not restored these screws at all or fixed anything. All they've done is debate whether a ridgeless screw is a nail or a screw.
So instead of like interacting with the plot, they're just giving out about what plot is happening.
Yes, and then meanwhile,
sounds about right.
All the main female characters, it turns out their mum is also representative of one of these planets. I didn't check which planet it was, whether it was Earth or the one who was missing last time they had a meeting. And I think Roy Batty is now like a bad drawing of a UFO. And so basically it's the mum, it is the Pluto representative, and the humanoid version of the Saturn hag have decided they've got to do something about this princess woman, whose name I can't remember because they never say it, is up to. And we also learn that the awesome fine screw is the final message from the originator. So we don't know what the originator is, whether the originator will turn out to be Bandai at the end. I suspect that might be the case.
Whoever pitched the show, yeah.
Yeah. And apparently that all the other levels are overrunning with Nedjerus still. So more and more Nedjerus are appearing. So it's definitely moving towards its end. I'm just curious as to how far it's going to go further insane. And I will say that the Your Name jokes in the Your Name episode are pretty good. And also kind of ruined Your Name for me. Right.
Oops.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I should rewatch them both next to each other at some point, because that Haybot episode it goes into some stuff about how certain shots are just emotionally manipulative, it points out.
Well, wasn't there like a shot in, I thought I saw it doing the rounds on Twitter, in this episode's Haybot, of like a guy with an afro that's like specifically a video of Miyazaki in a room with a curtain or something.
I just retweeted that because I was looking up Haybot.
Oh, that's probably how I saw it.
I suspected it was supposed to be Miyazaki. I can't remember what he said, because what he said was a very Miyazaki thing. But then to then see that screenshot today and it literally being a reproduction of something from a video with Miyazaki in. It's like
just an interview with him or something. Yeah.
The curtain and the picture behind him on the floor is the same.
It's super literal,
But they weren't as brave as Psyche K in making the character look totally like Miyazaki. That's Haybot. At some point when it's finished, I'll be interested in rewatching it all from the start. Because I
see if it all ties together.
I think it does have a grand plan amidst the idiocy. And we're interested in seeing what if anything it's trying to say seriously, or whether it is just, I can't make out whether they looked at the toy and said, "This is a terrible toy. We've got no chance of selling this. Let's make
a meta show about the making of a series."
Yes, because this is the thing I missed before. Yeah. Is I was just going to say how many toys there were to Niall over the weekend at Kitticon. I was wrong, because what had happened is with the Zodiac Vocabots, they bought out toys of the first six, but then for the subsequent six, they didn't bring out the toys. They just put one box out with all their screws in. So the toy, you can't get the toy, the things which the screws go in, you can only get the screws, which is why there's that episode where those six screws become that idol band, just the screws away from their bodies. And also, they mentioned in this episode that the six, six of the Zodiac Vocobots have gone missing. It's the ones which never had any toys brought out.
Which weren't released. Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's like the opposite of ROM Space Knight, where they're like, instead of like building a whole mythos around this pretty crappy toy, it's like, let's just say that the toy's crappy, and it's about the making of a crappy toy.
Yes.
A crappy franchise, I guess.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure whether the toy has failed because the cartoon did a singularly poor job of selling the toy.
Or the cartoon was just going like, yeah, we know what we are.
Yes, this is the best we can do with this terrible toy. Yeah, very curious, but I think it will hold up as a interesting curio by the end.
Mm.
Next up, Vatican Miracle Examiner, Episode 7. And what was this one called? Anyone got that right in front of them?
I do not.
So I'm about to sneeze. I'm no longer. here we go. Vatican Miracle Examiner. It's on again tomorrow. This episode was called Those Branded with a Curse. And we learn why this arc is called Satan's Judgment, because Roberto goes on trial after he's bitten by a black mamba. He goes up into Satan's court.
Yeah, and they're going to weigh his faith against things in the real world to see if his faith stacks up.
His vices, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, pretty close on rare books.
Doesn't want ladies. Sexy lady legs. Oh, he wants books, though. Lots of books. The second time he's been in the fucking infirmary in this thing, because
he wakes up. I'm honestly worried they'd kill him off, but except for that he is in further books and whatnot.
Yeah, he wakes up after like a panic attack apparently that he had.
Act like a panic attack is something that's like, oh, you weren't acting yourself. You were out of your fucking gourd, and we had to take you to hospital and give you a sedative. You were having such a panic attack. I was like, that's an extreme panic attack.
Anyways, I'm busy helping Father Julia here in the infirmary, so I might not be able to be around helping the investigation. However, we do have this really old library that's been for generations. It's filled with books that have been left from the previous priest. Maybe I'll look through these, but I might get a few clues to what's happening here.
So I'm not sure which guy is the red herring. So you have the author of the prophecies kind of go, like I have a scene earlier where he's like, soon I'll be fucking famous because the prophecy will come through and everyone will fucking believe it and I'm going to make lots of money. Ha 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 ha. Basically into the camera, but to the characters. But you also have is Julia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of going like, oh, by the way, there's three cursed books in the library. And when I went there earlier, they were gone. And I told him he could take the books into his thing. So, I don't know, might be the devil. Now I'm suspecting him. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, who the fuck is at fault here? And that guy, Father, what's his name? The African guy, and I kept thinking, it's like, oh, obviously he's fucking into some shit because they keep kind of like putting the camera on him, and it's like, is he up to something? But based off this episode, it's like, okay, that one's at least crossed off the list.
Yes, because he is without a head. Well, he's still got his head; it's just not attached to his body when they find him.
Yeah, that'll do it. Like, okay, not you then.
Yeah, my impression by the end of the episode was that the snake cult thing is a complete red herring.
Somebody
is framing them as the culprits.
Yeah. Like, I think a father, was it Anderson? I can't remember his bloody name. Oh, Armstrong. That was it. If I suspected him, and I was like, maybe it's like he was involved in it, like the murders in the last arc, where he was involved in it, but he killed them off to keep them quiet, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And Father Judy is up to no good, though, because it's like, okay, it's night of this like weird like local folk festival, and
it's perfect.
I have to go away now. I hope no murders happen while I'm gone.
You guys should stay in the church. You should not leave the church.
And the guy who walks up to him is like, hey, will you guys come out? Because none of the other priests will come out because they're afraid of this cult that happens every once a year where the local spirits rise and kill Catholics. And I was like, even if I didn't believe that shit, I was like, just in case, I'm going to stay indoors just for the night. But no, they go out and investigate.
We should mention that Haraga had got a pre-prepared anti-venom for every poisonous snake in the neighborhood.
Yeah, because he saw the painting and freaked him out. Yes. So
it looked like there was a snake around his neck. So he thought, it's only going to try and kill him with a snake.
Oh, I thought it would be just as simple as they had the anti-venom in the hospital, but apparently not. No.
The other thing that Herrera got sent over was an ultrasound machine, and he sets to work on scanning the body, and wouldn't you know it, he may have passed away from cirrhosis of the liver.
And also, Roberto seems to think that he's on to how the body's being preserved as well. I didn't look up the French family.
The Bourbon dynasty and the secret to their gold.
Yeah, there's some like weird Satan thing for turning, for bringing a corpse to, not to back to life, but to use it as a puppet, but also turning it into gold, yeah. French spells for it. I think the spell is like the literally like I don't have any money or something like that in French. I forget exactly.
Yeah, there was like some like crazy guy. I don't know, was he French or Italian? But he did have some kind of metaphor like preserving a body like perfectly, and also kind of like petrifying it almost. But then like he died. His method was lost to the ages. But examples exist of his work.
But you have Roberto like realizing this discovery over like they find the friggin' headless priest or the head detached from his body, and he's just there laughing. I figured it out, and everyone looking at him, dude, this is wildly inappropriate. A man. He first have gone off the deep end a bit, yeah.
I like his mad scientist behavior.
It's pretty good, yeah. Obsessing over the ancient books and everything, yeah.
Just locked in the room for days now. He's discarded like the collar and the robe and something like that. He's like, man, Roberto, you've fallen to degeneracy. I'm so close. Get out of here, Haraga.
You almost cracked the code. It's good stuff.
And yeah, Bill Suskins meets them, the FBI agent. And
the special agent, FBI agent, Bill Suskins, what are you doing here? Give him his full title and name.
Yeah. Because we still have to get used to him as a character, I guess.
If you want to find your friend, you need to look in the cave. Not saying, by the way, your mate's had his head chopped off in the cave.
Yeah, because in the cave, he's like, I'm sorry, this might disturb you, fathers. And it's like, you saw them the other day, and there was like a desiccated corpse of a woman on the fucking ground. Are you just really like screwing with people right now? It's like, let's see if they... maybe he was like, let's see how they react, if they're the murderers or something. That's the only thing, but he does apologize to them.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I'm guessing that might be why he did it.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's probably not the lads here. They're not the main suspects, considering he's murdered in front of a snake altar, you know?
I was going to say, based on the previous arc, I'm entirely expecting Bill Suskins to figure everything out rather than these two.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, they're supposed to not disprove miracles, but prove miracles. So they're kind of religious skeptics in one regard. But he's talking to this guy. He's like, hey, are you sure you're going to be okay? Yeah, I'm good. I saw the devil. And it's like, come on, guys. Calm down a bit.
He not only saw the devil, but then three angels said, hey, guys, you're okay. You're okay. Don't go to hell yet. They gave him a pat on the back and sent him back down to earth.
Yeah. I did like his snake adjudicator in that thing, snake at a guy, where he's kind of like, oh, pretty close there with the books, huh? You know, kind of thing. Just rubbing the salt in the wound.
Yeah, quite clearly it's just his subconscious in his delirium from almost dying from a snake bite. But
Well, of course, the question is, was that, does that state just happen to crawl in, and was it released into the room?
Well, I'm going to guess it's released into the room, otherwise this isn't much of a mystery.
If that was a random snake attack while he was locked up in his room,
Also, I don't think anything random happens in this show.
No. I think red herrings happen to throw you off, but other than that, everything's in there for a purpose,
Especially when you're dealing with a story that involves prophecies, because the best way to make something happen is to engineer its occurrence.
Yeah.
It's like in the previous arc, we were suspicious of that monk who was acting suspiciously, but we didn't know that he was acting suspiciously in a completely different purpose to everybody else who was acting suspiciously.
He was acting suspicious for the good guys. Yes. Yeah. It's a really good show. I don't know if I was talking about it, just sounds like rantings of madmen, though. I assume so.
This is just encouraging people to watch it, because it is great. Don't listen to what the reviewer on Anime News Network, who seems to think they're trying to make a serious show and messing up.
Fuck no, dude.
No!
I Like when it shows the two lads walking and it has those fucking like 45 degree Dutch angles on them, I'm just like, yes, this show knows what it is.
And the way you don't get a preview, you just get them two discussing it over the credit.
And Chinnery Roberts says something really creepy. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, they also don't seem to know that it's a book adaptation, and they seem to blame the anime writers for things. It's like they're just adapting what the material is.
It's a bad, they're terrible, trashy pulp novels. Like they can't like really get the all work without around the boundaries are given. Like,
yeah, it is what it is. Sure.
It's not like with a lot of Western things where they would adapt and change things. It's what flows better on a screen. Japan notoriously has respect to the rights of the creator and their work, so here's what you get.
Because this is an advert for the books, and I tell you, if these were available in English, it's working.
Yeah. No, dude, if these were in English, I would absolutely read them as well. I was like, this looks like the most fucking fun.
They're probably terribly written, but they're probably by amazing ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
Next up, Welcome to the Ballroom. Heat 6, I want to say, or 7?
Seven.
This is called the Tenpai Cup, in which this week, Shizuku gets some lines.
And finally, someone gets slapped, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And also, I was because after last week's episode where Shizuku didn't say anything, I was like, let's go on my anime list and see if other people are thinking the same as we are. Or particularly same as Niall. And then I learnt that, the female lead has not shown up yet and may not show up in this season of the anime.
Yeah. Maybe it's trying to get the main cast and our main character down before introducing his partner, which I assume a lot of the stuff after that is going to be them working together.
Yes.
Kind of like a team shonen sport thing.
In the comic, he did like a list of the characters and marked them on heroine points and rival points. And Chinatsu, who's the character we've not seen yet, got 5 points for rival and 5 points for heroine. Whereas...
okay.
I won't spoil it, but she does seem to be like... I'm not sure whether Mako and Shizuku are designed to set this character up, or people had similar complaints to Niall, and so therefore he decided to create this character to
if that was a thing halfway down the plot.
By the sounds of things, she works as both, you see.
She works as a foil and she works as a partner.
This is a character who's very different to Shizuku and Mako. But it's like the question is, do Mako and Shizuku exist in order to make you want that sort of character? Or was Shizuku a botch? Because it just kind of feel like he was going for something and didn't quite land it.
Character polls, man. Character polls have changed comics drastically. Dragon Ball Z was going to have Gohan continuing on, but no, everyone wanted Goku back, so they had to bring him back the story on.
But yes, as you say, someone gets slapped, and it is the right guy to get slapped by the right person to slap him.
I did like how they didn't make it like, I think she hits him in the head with a bottle, but it's like one of those plastic bottles that everyone's drinking out of. So it's not the worst thing, but it feels good.
But at the same time, Sengoku should be next in queue for getting slapped.
Oh, fucking yeah. He's right up there.
But there is some great stuff, because they introduce, what's-his-face's mum in this episode. Yodo's mum.
Yodo's mother, Marisa.
And what I'd imagined of her, she is not like that at all. She seems perfectly nice. And quite fun.
But the way Sengoku's acting, it's like maybe there's something else that we've not seen.
My guess is because the way his instinct is to hide Tatara from her is that she keeps on stealing his students.
Okay, because she's like a big deal. Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. And they make the point out that she's retired from professional dancing. She's just
But training. Still heavily involved.
Yeah,
by
she's
the
just
look
training
of it.
People.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But yeah, so it's the Tenpai Cup, they go in the dancing competition, and yeah, it's basically a load of competitive dancing, and Tatara's up and down emotions, which completely keeps on throwing Sengoku, he's like, stick to one emotion through the entire episode.
Yeah, because he keeps like getting, like in between the rounds, he just starts panicking, and then he steps up, like each time. I think there's like two different dances each round, so it's like the start one and then like a second one, and then he's actually made his way to the finals now. Because they get through like at least four different styles, I think.
They're in the semi-finals now, and then there's a final after that.
Yeah, exactly. So four rounds to it or something. Yeah. We also found out Sengoku's, what is he, like 23 or something?
Yes.
He says he's 23.
Maybe.
23 be whole. You're fucking older than that, I bet.
Well, I guess he still is a pro. He's still out doing contests. So for him to be young enough wouldn't be that crazy, I guess. He does seem a lot older.
Yes. Well, and the characters themselves comment that they thought he was older. We've also not met his partner yet either, have we?
I don't think so, no. I'm trying to think if she was if she even was shown as a face on that competition video. Yeah.
I assume that she will play a part at some point, and then maybe we'll see some different sides of Sengoku. He won't be quite so arrogant as he is to the kids.
Manipulative. Yeah.
Well, boy, he looks pretty good in comparison to Gaju, who is still a little shithead. I hate him.
Yeah, he's a good rival, all right, because you really don't like the fucker.
I can't remember. Is Gaju supposed to be like a year older than Tatara and Shizuku?
Don't know.
Because Mako's like a year younger, isn't it? Because we know Tatara and Shizuku are just ending their middle school years.
Oh, yeah, so if he's like, he's not her twin or anything, so he'd be an older brother. Yeah.
And we know Mako is like in second year middle school. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. You're still making clonking and wobbling noises, Dwayne.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must be hitting something with my,
I assume it's you. I don't think it's Niall. There's not much else to add, really. It was a lot of action, so to speak. They clanked into each other at one point when they both were following the same idea of cutting out a space in the floor for themselves to do their quick step in.
Yeah. He does the quick thing towards the judges, and they nearly like smack their partners' heads into each other, but they both flip around and take the hit.
But he's the one who stops dancing and falls.
Yeah, makes that mistake.
He seems to get launched about 50 feet horizontally off the dance floor.
Yeah.
And yeah, they do a bit of explanation of how the scoring's done in this style of competition with all the guys using their apps around the sides of the floor.
I mean, that's if you get like whatever many checks.
Yeah, that's one thing I think the show does well is introduce little bits of how dance competitions work bit by bit.
Not all at once. Yeah, that's the ideal way.
And it was a fine episode. And yes, Shizuku was her comment about, "Oh, you think you're trying to make Mako a better dancer than me, do you?" She sort of puts Tatara in
it's
place
finally she has like a stake in the game kind of thing. It's like, don't underestimate me, kind of thing.
And does he turn around at one point and see Hyodo there? Is that towards the end of the episode?
That's towards the end. Yeah, he turns up.
Yeah, he turns up at the competition because that's where presumably his mother was driving earlier episode.
She was fining him for not speaking Russian.
Because he's going to see his Grammy or something and he has to speak Russian only.
It sounds like he wanted to because that was the point she made.
It was his plan, You
wanted to speak your grandfather's Russian language. So I assume he's quarter Russian?
Yeah, and that might suggest where he's going and why he's going, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Again, the overseas thing they keep bringing up.
Yeah, and presumably that would split him and Shizuku up if she's going to... Were they suggesting she's going to the UK?
I can't remember if it was that or France or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they need to... Hopefully they'll reel back those plot threads at some point because it's kind of focused firmly on Tatara so much, which you probably need to do at the start of this series just to get you in his shoes used to the world of competitive dance.
I feel like I'm kind of used to that now, so I would not mind, at least bringing or characters like into his world. But I suppose Mako is kind of
fleshing them out a little bit
now. But I feel like it's probably better to try and keep the focus on this one thing here and there, where I'm spinning around too much. But I still feel like a lot of our characters are losing out right now, getting a bit more fleshing out. So I hope they can have, they find like a better balance a little later on.
We forgot Mako's exploding boob.
I was going to say she got a little bit. She got a little bit more characterization in this one, which I did enjoy. But her fucking awful plan being like this wacky thing that just makes them get through, I thought was kind of fun. In the weird way that they did it.
Yes. The slapstick of everybody else falling over.
And yeah.
Quite how many she'd stuffed in her bra.
Yeah.
Quite ridiculous. But
and then her thing, I was like, don't worry, I still got one boob left. That's not the problem.
This isn't wacky racist novel. Through that shit.
They were trying to improve their silhouette because they'd seen earlier how her brother and Shizuka...
Oh, they got marked for silhouette before they even got on the floor. Yeah
before they'd even started moving. It was already clear that they'd won that round. Righty ho, moving on to Reflection, episode 5. Thy and Michael, and I am done with this show.
I thought this was an improvement, but why are you specifically done on
I'm
this
done
one?
With it once I got to the point where both the character in the foreground who was talking and the characters in the background who were talking had no facial features.
Right, okay. I thought it might be something like that. Yeah. I thought they were just like, here are randos in the background. We don't need to draw their faces. Main characters, no face. Yeah.
Oh, also, I made the mistake of, the first time I watched it through, I was doing something else, so I'd switched the sound off. And boy, does the music carry this show. It is interminable.
There's a lot of stills.
Without the music.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what kind of got me, like, the last episode and stuff. That just so many, like, static fucking shots.
This is not a good visual style.
It could be a good visual style, but it needs to be more fucking animated.
It shouldn't be moving. It should be on a printed page. It would look great there.
No,
it would need more detail on a printed page.
It doesn't even pass for that. It doesn't even work like that.
I don't know. I have seen stuff like this, and maybe what kind of panel layout can make this kind of really pop off. You know, it has a certain appeal to it, but when it moves, I think as soon as it starts moving, you see all of the cracks immediately.
I see.
I get you.
I think the movement is when it's good, and I think when it's static, it is terrible. Because it's
like there were sometimes I think. Sorry.
There's so little detail. Everything is so brown and muddy as well in the coloring. This would not pass as a good comic.
Yeah. It's like I was thinking like something that does like a really clean style like Aja or something like that. And that I mean like I know that has a lot of detail in it, but like the big solid colors are there to make the through line of the action and everything really clear. And this, yeah, it's really the colors haven't been chosen for that purpose. It's just like, oh, we're going to go over a realistic color palette. Well, near real color palette in that muddy. I don't mean
I
an actual
say, more like a 90s Vertigo comic color palette.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like there's clearly like a filter on, so everything's like going to be red and brown in the scene, but boy howdy is everything going to be red and brown. But there's not enough detail for it to pass, if that makes sense.
And no, we can agree. Sorry.
So, and no eye guy this episode.
Yeah. I really feel the lack of eye guy when he's not there, despite how bullshit he was recently.
It's not so much him; it's his song. It's like,
yeah, that's true as well.
I mean, I'll buy that song. That song is a good song. I mean,
it is a good song. Yeah,
anything that this has given us, it's given us that song. But yeah, I just can't be doing with this anymore.
Yeah, and we can agree at least definitely that it's. Is as slow as ketchup.
Yes.
Yeah. To talk about the episode a little rather than just ragging on the entire thing, I did like the scene where the cops are coming, the crooked cops are coming in the swamp boats. I don't know what those things are called. Outboard? No, that what the big
a fan boat.
Is it just called a fan boat? Okay.
Yeah.
Because like it kind of used its lack of fucking color and detail and stuff pretty well for a bit, like where they're being attacked by the big monster, we find out woman, that you're not seeing enough things. And I was like, oh, that kind of works. That there've been it seemed to suit that scene. Sometimes the style suits, but it's fucking rare, you know.
Yeah, I think it was, again, I think it was, this is the problem we didn't have with the past two, I didn't have with the past two episodes. It's when there's lots of people on screen that the style is abhorrent. And this has, this has just basically a room full of people. And because they're not animating the people in the backgrounds, they're just static. Well, it's like, what are these people? Are they all just posing perfectly still while Eleanor and...
why are they all standing up in the room? Why didn't a few of them grab a chair or something?
Have a conversation,
One of them reading a book or... They're just sort of, we will stand in this room while we're hiding.
Yes, well, part of the reason why is because they can't see or hear and smell what's going on because they haven't got any facial features.
I guess that does mess them up a little bit.
It would be a big room for the mannequins just to be creepy. It's a creepy old mansion.
Your man's power of, I'm blind now. It appears to take something away and give you something back, and I'm guessing the reflection is a reflection of you as a person, blah, whatever. He can see only reflected people, but also he can tell if they're good or evil. If they've been hit by light or smoke or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I thought that was just some crap that it was kind of threw in there, but then actually the real question of it was just probably something that was made up, and you know, that's just kind of the clean cut version that the public has sold. But literally we are going here, light good, smoke bad.
Yeah, I was really waiting. I was hoping they'd do it as a thing in this episode, but I guess that would be in a better show of him looking at what's your man's name, Exxon or whatever. Looking at him is like, oh, you're fucking smoke, which would explain why he's such a prick, like, all the fucking time. That there's some rising above it or being different about it, or but apparently it's like, no, goodies and baddies. That's how it is.
He's a very useless superhero outside of New York, I will say.
Yeah, the only bit of assholery he gets in this is where he grabs that corrupt sheriff and flick his hat off.
He does bring Lisa her wheelchair, though.
Yeah, that was okay, I guess. That kind of made up for a lot of jerkiness in the prior episodes in the backseat of a car.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And Eleanor was doing some good stuff, too. She was teleporting around, just pushing guys into the water.
Yeah, it's like teleportation is actually a really good power. You can do a lot of good with it.
But after they've taken care of them, they go back and everybody's gone from the mansion.
Yeah, the steel ruler, which is still a silly name to me. She obviously ducked in and robbed all the guys.
Now we'll never see the girl band who arrived from Japan.
But when are they going to get to the idol superhero group? Yeah.
What if they never do? Or they just show up in the last episode to save the day?
We're in the new show! Yeah, sure.
Right, what's next on the list? It is, the other superhero show, My Hero Academia.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we would have stuck with the reflection if it wasn't looking so bad in comparison.
Episode 33, A Tale from the Past. My other thought was, why am I watching this when I could go back to watching 100% Teacher Pascal?
No one was stopping you watching it. It was I wasn't getting much out of it. You were free to continue on.
My time was eaten by the reflection. Okay, yeah, so listen up, A Tale from the Past. So they're all back in class. They have a exercise.
All Might's got a special treat, yeah.
Yeah, they have a race, they do. They split into five, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're competing to see who can save him the first, and you're going through like an industrial kind of place.
Yeah.
But don't damage anything, Bakugo. That was a nice turn. I did like the way everyone was like, Midori's not going to do well in this.
Zoom, he's just rocketing by.
And they didn't like do the thing where, he fucking beats everyone handily. It's kind of like, you can see how much he's changed. And I mean, I got all my comments on all of them as much. It's like, you're all doing much better from your practical experience, I suppose. Yeah.
But it's good to see when Cero pull a win out of the hat once in a while.
Yeah. The place was suited for him the most because he can Spider-Man his way around the place. Yeah.
Because Baka goes mad at Midoriya because he's copying his technique to move faster. Before that, we got a little talk with Gran Torino as well, where we discovered that Gran Torino still hasn't learned his name, but that's just to make sure him make sure he identifies himself as his superhero name, not
as
middle. Yeah, that was kind of good to turn around that joke and make it a more so him trying to teach him a thing. Yeah.
Well, yes, because we get his like internal monologue as well. But he's like, "Yeah, well, mate, you've picked the right person. He's not exactly the same as you, but he's got the same drive.
He's the same where it counts." Yeah.
And then he tells the story of how One for All came to be, and the arch-villain of the piece, All for One,
has the power to take powers and put them into other people.
Yes.
But that can end up like sometimes it's not that they reject the powers, it's just it kind of empties them out, and that makes Anomu. So establishes all of that. Talks about it's like Baldwin says, I don't know, out of kindness or out of cruelty, he forced it into his seemingly powerless younger brother. But his younger brother did have the power to pass on a power.
That's it, yes. So he put in a power,
which is useless when you don't have an existing power. Yeah.
So he gave him a power which stores and grows power. So yes, combined with that other quirk, and that created One for All. This quirk which can be passed on, and as it gets passed on, it becomes more powerful.
And so he started the legacy, to figuring one of his descendants would beat the guy. And All Might was the guy to beat him, or so he thought.
I really, really like to have this, like, the sort of hidden history for some time the world was there was this kind of blanket of terror and darkness. Removed from cards, bright future. It kind of reminded me a lot of actually of Giant Robo. Like, the world was formerly like living in terror, and now it's we live instead in a bright future where powers are regulated and they're used for the greater good of the planet.
It's kind of interesting to take the premise and go like, well, right now is good, but it was bad, but we could fall into that again, and that's kind of like your threat, which is it's what they're doing here. And I thought it was kind of good. The Midoriya, what was his line? Is like some famous person, I don't think he actually says the name, says like, if we didn't get quirks, we would have been had like space tourism or something by now.
Yeah.
Like, it put them back a bit to, I guess, more our version of technology and that kind of thing. It held them back in that regard.
But then, of course, All Might fails to tell him the thing, the exact thing that Gran Torino really wanted him to tell him in the first place.
I like that they haven't said it, but it's pretty obvious what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they've all but said it by the end of the episode.
Well, yeah. That's because Izuka says, it's fine, you're here to watch over us. And he's like,
I don't know how many anime shows people have watched before coming to this one, but if you see, like, early on, the character was coughing up blood frequently, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I would have just said the mentor character doesn't tend to do well.
Oh, no,
doesn't tend to go the distance. Yeah.
Duke will up from his cover.
We already know that he will use the power for less and less time as well. So,
yeah, it's not like his sickness is progressing. It's more that it's a transferred power. It's not because other than that, he could just keep giving it to loads of people if that's how it worked.
And then we get our shot of All for One. Him and his doctor. Complaining that they didn't get the super regeneration power until after he'd healed up. And so his face is just a massive scar tissue from the lips.
Yeah, you see like nearly half of his face, and it's like, it appears to be like scar tissue all over where the eyeball would be.
So it's like, what on earth did All Might do to him?
Really fucked him up. I did that recap. It looked kind of like a Sin City type situation in the black and white. It was nice.
There's a good way to use this as seeing a villain hidden in shadow, but technically we have shown his face. It's just completely messed up, so you can't really discern it is a true identity.
yeah, that's nice. A good bit of complaining is like, damn, it sucks we didn't get Wolverine's shit beforehand. That kind of way, yeah.
And presumably he's also on borrowed time, as the fact that he's talking about raising Shigaraki to be his successor.
Either that, or I wonder if he can like pop himself inside that guy when he achieves a certain level.
Possibly,
since that's his power. Yeah,
maybe he's looking for somebody who's got a mind transferal power.
Maybe it's kind of like a thing of Whereas All Might's thing is One for All is to find your successor. This one's like, I'm going to find the next guy I'm going to be. That kind of way. That's the impression I was getting from it, because he's like, yeah, this guy will do. He just needs a little more sanding and fixing the edges.
Yeah, it's just unrestrained avarice, saying that you're consuming, like, you know, not just money, resources, you're consuming entire human beings as well to sustain yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen his story yet, have we? In the comic.
Whose story? The villain?
The villain. I know we get some more of Shigaraki's background, but I'm not sure if we get the rest of All For One's or not. I can't remember. Obviously, watching this, I'm viewing it with certain knowledge of...
That's why I stopped reading. Like, I have like two of the books sitting there. I think it's going to be three soon enough, but it's kind of like, I don't want to read it as I go along. Because I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to be... I'm going to be judging it based off what I know.
Yeah, my feeling is we've only got the story that we just saw. I don't think we've seen it from his point of view.
Right, okay.
Because, he's kind of like the only motivations we've got for him is like, oh, he's an evil person and he's got a power which helps him become even more evil and control things. But
I wonder if it's something along the line of, like, again, mirroring the Midoriya story in one way, since his power isn't to have a power himself, it's the taking of powers.
Well, no, he gets those powers once he's took them, and then he can...
No, that's what I mean. Like, is it like the power corrupts kind of...
Possibly, yeah. I'm just curious as to wonder, because obviously he's a guy who had his quirk from when quirks first appeared.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, who was he before he got a quirk?
Was there something
Was he like this before he got the quirk, or did the quirk in some way corrupt him in the first place?
Okay.
I don't know whether we'll ever find that out or not, because it feels in the comic they've kind of moved on a bit from him now to something else.
Okay.
Right, next up. Anyway, this is a good episode, by the way. Yeah. and then we get some... Is it some more activities? Oh, they also announced they've got to do their final exams, and if they pass, they get to go to the...
Summer training camp,
yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, one more thing in this episode. After the contest, they have the locker room scene.
Oh, yes.
I was glad of it, because I knew that motherfucker was going to get poked in the eye, and it was just as like, yeah, fuck you, as I thought it would be. It felt nice to me.
Mm-hmm. A little
creep.
Well, I'm happy as well that no one was really going along with it. For saying that,
yeah, everyone was like, that's kind of weird.
But you're raised right, not a little twerp.
Yeah, yeah.
They do a similar thing in Black Clover, except it's the adult character who wants to peek, and it's like all the children are like very well behaved because they were brought up by nuns. Next up, it is Rage of Bahamut. Virgin Soul, it's returned, Invictus. In which we get plotting, planning, and generally being in love.
Yeah, everything's looking well for Nina. Like, other people less so. At least initially, like, it seems that Azazel is still kind of sore about the whole thing.
Yeah, a lot of this episode is Azazel kind of working through
his shit. A lot of shit went down with him. Yeah.
But kind of feeling by the end of it that it is kind of his fault.
Because he says he doesn't blame Nina. He's just very upset when she sees she can turn into a dragon whenever now. It's like, motherfucker, could you not have done that a while back? It's like, this is my fault. I put it all on her.
Yes.
I promised him I could fucking fulfill this.
He was a creep. He lied to his friends, and they got killed.
Yeah.
They also are planning to get into a party in disguise, which Kaiser seems to have achieved. Or is that kid gonna double cross him?
hard to fucking say. That kid's like motivations are kind of...
Yeah, it's kind of like, is he... Because he tries to join the Onyx Knights and they won't have him. So is he mad at them enough?
Probably for the best.
But yeah, the question is he mad at them enough to help Kaiser? Or does he think that if he betrays Kaiser to them, then they'll allow
that
him
he'll
to
show go. That he, where his alliances lie? Yeah.
You go either way, then get his stage.
Yeah, exactly.
I did like Nina going, is like, I'll infiltrate the party. It's like, and everyone's like, no. No.
Your whole deal is turning into a dragon and smashing stuff. How is that still?
But I can control it now. Yeah. And it's like.
Also, we're all pretty sure you're in love with the king.
Like, everyone's fairly certain of that now. Like, not Kaiser. What's his name?
Right. Yeah.
Favreau, most of fucking all. Pretty sure he's been tailing her this entire time. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like, well, why weren't you tailing her? But he obviously was tailing her, and his thing is, like, he understands her position of being in love with the wrong person from Rage of Bahamut Genesis. But he also warns her that you may have to do something to that wrong person that you don't want to do. So also Rage of Bahamut Genesis.
My goodness, Favreau being a mature adult, who would have thought?
I know.
I mean, like, not much, a little bit.
He spent 10 years running away from it.
Yeah, he says he mostly, like, just, I don't want to fucking make big decisions, but in your life, you're going to have to make some big decisions, and sometimes they really fucking suck. Yeah.
And meanwhile, the head of the Knights is also plotting as he hires somebody who kills dragons. I thought it was Pazuzu with a broken mask from the first, but does not appear to be. I don't know who that guy is.
He's a demon, isn't he?
He appears to be a demon.
Looks to be. It's hard to kind of tell. It was a 7 before, because both myself and Brian completely forgot that Jean d'Arc got possessed and was turned loose on the city the last scene, last series. So maybe it's some guy who might have appeared in one of the earlier episodes now when we've presumed dead, but that's actually just horribly maimed instead.
Yeah, because Azazel's mate was Pazuzu, and he was like a tiger. Is he like a lion man with a mask on? And I was like, oh, but he appeared to have died in the first series. But I looked on the credits, and I couldn't see a Pazuzu in the credits. But I wasn't going to go through all the names and try and translate and figure out which one this guy is.
Right.
I assume he's some kind of demon, because demon covers a broad sweep of things in this world.
Yeah, they're very different looking demons, sure.
Yes, and I guess this guy has killed dragons before. So we'll see how well he gets on next episode, I guess.
Well, no, I assume they're going to go to the ball and everything's going to go fine.
Yeah. Yeah, we should say they're trying to get to the ball because they want to steal the bracelet.
Yeah, Nina's like, I'm pretty sure he wears it all the time, because they were like, we don't even know if he carries it with him. And they're like, how the hell do you know that? Well, obviously,
as a viewer, I'm pretty sure it's welded to his skin at this point.
Yeah, that looks like it. The zombie girl is like super suspicious of Nina, like in every way, just giving her the side eye all the time. It's pretty great.
But yeah, I think it does a nice job with this episode with Azazel of kind of like, Azazel has the more noble aims, but he went around about them in a way that was...
up to a point, he was taking it all on himself, and it's only when he started kind of trying to make those his methods, like of being the rag demon, bigger and bring other people into it, that you see how wrong those methods are and how badly they can fucking end up for other people.
But as like a romantic interest for Nina, he was the bad choice out of him and Chris.
Where he started, certainly,
Chris is the one who is actually in love with Rita and wasn't trying to use her as a weapon. Nina rather, not Rita.
I was going to say, he's in love with Rita?
Yes. No. I was going to say, Kaiser's probably the choice there. So it's like the weird is like the villain is the one who is the better romantic choice for Nina than the hero is.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was coming from a place, like you said, of like there was a noble goal, but the way he was going about it was going to get people hurt.
Yeah,
I did like him turning towards. I was going to say Mogoro. I've forgotten his real name. L.
Yes.
Because he turns to L, and it's just like, because it seems like he's mad at El, or he's disgusted that El's actually an angel or whatever. But it's like he's entirely forgiven everyone else. He's gone like, yeah, this was mine. This is on me. I need to do better. But the end of the episode, you see he's kind of come to terms with that.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. He's kind of less angry at the wrong people now. But presumably he will kill the king with any second
thought. With the first chance he gets, sure.
I'm pretty sure he's not going to be thinking of Nina's heart at that point.
Yeah.
But I'm going to guess if anybody
has... I'm wondering how many of our other cast would straight up kill the king given the chance, you know?
I think it's mainly Azazel. I think Kaiser would still try and...
bring the just...
reason with him.
Yeah. Do or, the peaceful solution. Yeah, sure. Oh, him and Drag this episode. Pretty great.
Yeah.
what's that Drag? I thought I was just wearing
him. Yeah, this... I just thought he was dressed as a fancy waiter.
Okay. I thought he was supposed to be one of the girls, but you're thinking he was just supposed to be like a fancy guy.
Very bad wig. I thought that's not fixed on properly at all. even the animation, I can tell. It's going to comb straight off, and it does.
Yeah. It's not a good disguise. The show is very good at bad disguises. Actually, yeah, we get another one of Basilio pretending to be a fucking idiot. I'm not exactly sure what his plan was there. Just sort of dancing in a circle while the duck does recon.
Oh, yeah, they send him out over the giant hand to get an idea of what's going on.
Can't see giant hand in the way.
No. But it's good to have it back. It's still moving exactly the same pace as it is before. I think some people are expecting to move more faster as a more action-packed thing like Genesis was, but I think it's a different sort of show.
I'm enjoying the sheer fun it's having getting there, so yeah.
Righty-o, and the last thing, I believe, unless I've missed anything, don't think I have.
I don't think so.
Speak up if I have. It's Dragon Ball Super, the ultimate high-speed battle begins. Goku and Hit join forces. This was a good episode of Dragon Ball Super. I did like the fight in this.
It didn't feel as a reused animation as it has been for a little bit now.
And
yeah,
it also had the best line of the year. Bring me my Vuvuzela.
Of course, Champa people are shitheads who have a Vuvuzela.
It's the fact that then they did bring him his Vuvuzela and he had it later on in the episode.
And he was honking it, yeah.
Even after it was pointed out that it wasn't going to help his plan.
Well, he's cheering on his team.
Hits gets into a fight with, is it Dispo?
Dispo.
Yes.
Dispo, yeah.
Who they do point out looks like Beerus. Champa points it out.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, does he say it looks like Beerus or it looks like us?
Well, Champa says, it looks like Beerus. He's got one of those serious hard faces.
Yes.
Well, it looks kind of like you too, my lord. No. I've got kind of a soft, like appealing face. Not like Beerus. He's got all kind of stern and serious. Not like him at all, no.
He doesn't see the purple giant ears as being similar. The demeanor is all about him. And it turns out that guy actually is, like, because I was like, is this guy actually good? You know, the other guys didn't last very long on that team.
He can move so fast that he can outrun the stoppage of time. So that's a pretty fast guy.
He can outrun the activation of the stoppage of time. Because I was like, is he so fast he can move and stop time? Is initially what I was thinking.
No.
But he's just watching for Hit to tense up to do the activation.
He's listening for his muscles.
That's right. He's using the big ears to listen to the muscles in the way he moves to activate stopping time and punch him before the fuck he does that.
Which is why Champa thinks that he can distract him with a Vuvuzela. Won't be able to hear Hit's muscles.
It's like he's probably tuned into the wavelength. I don't think that's going to work. Bring it anyway. I presume she had to teleport away to get it or something. Maybe it's a little dimensional pocket. Who knows?
Quite possibly, yes. so it seems to be going badly to Hits, but then Hit cottons on. He starts making the muscle when it moves, but not actually doing the time stop.
He's throwing dummies basically. Yes. Like
so he's like, what am I gonna do now? What am I gonna do now? What, he don't know.
Am I gonna stop time or am I just gonna punch you in the fucking face? You decide, motherfucker.
Before even then, he was kind of feigned to give him try and like get him towards the edge of the arena so that then he would like
he could go between dodge
through time across the dimensions, and then so this would zip right through him over the edge.
Which he does. Then
they kinda, almost. They stop being Justice-y and start teaming up at him, double teaming him.
Yes, he gets saved by the guy.
Oh, I forgot his name. The energy guy.
Yeah, he kind of moves like a Sontaran from Doctor Who. He's kind of got that.
Same... Well, that's because he has like the no neck and it looks like he's wearing a turtleneck. His head is so into his body, like a Sontaran. Yeah,
Kunchi. Yeah, he's like
he has energy string.
That's it. Yeah, he's like Spider-Man, but with energy, which can then explode as well.
When he laid that all around, it's like, that's right. If you come one step closer, I'll fucking explode. This shit'll explode. I was like, okay, you're in the middle of that, and also people can shoot energy in this fucking thing. That's an established thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure how that was going to save him.
Yeah, and so
I guess he didn't know Hit had that bullet punch thing.
Yeah, Cauliflower's like, oh, I've got to go and help Hit, and she's about to when Goku shows up, and he's like, hey, having some trouble, Hit. What a hand.
By the way, I'm Super Saiyan God now, somehow.
Yeah, I wonder if he did that in the Frieza arc we didn't watch.
Oh, just kind of switched that. Oh, got to that level, is it?
Yeah, maybe.
Could be.
Is that right?
That's my feeling, is that might be where it happened. Or it didn't happen, and they've just pushed over it. I'm fine, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't need everything explained. And yes, they swap opponents and they swap back, and they do a pretty good job at they get rid of Kunchi, but then Dispo is saved. Basically, Kunchi saves him and sacrifices himself so he can get away.
Well, he tries to sacrifice himself by pulling one of the lads over with him.
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, but I can stop time, stupid, says Hit. You know, it's like, ropes is good, but...
My favorite
stopping
bit
time
is
better.
Hit warns Goku about Kunchi's explosive web is laid over the floor, and Goku says, yeah, don't care. Just runs straight through it.
Yeah, he man's like, you idiot, now it's exploding. He's like, oh, he's still coming at me. Oh, no.
Yeah, he walks through and then he shoots him.
Yeah.
With an agile attack.
Yeah, just to see if he could.
Yeah, because he temporarily went Super Saiyan Blue just to get through the threads, and then but yeah, so Dispo's still alive, he's still in the battle, he's with Jiren and Toppo, and he's talking about justice, and Toppo goes, no, time for the talk for evil and justice is over, this is just survival.
Yeah, because they've only got three lads left. Like,
we just gotta do whatever it takes to keep our universe alive.
My favorite score in this one, we're getting our asses kicked here.
Well, presumably because their best guy is just standing there with his arms folded, fucking looking at motherfuckers.
Come on, Jiren, get in the match.
Just pick off some of the shitty guys. Do something. Jesus. Maybe he's like
Jiren.
Got a
not
movie
yet.
Limited time. Maybe not he can only last 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? Or maybe there's something observation-based in his powers. Maybe he's
once he sees it,
finding who the most dangerous ones are, observing their styles, and so he can counter them later on.
It's still pretty cheap.
It
it's
is.
Like, come on, get in the fight, man.
What's happening next week? I didn't look. I don't think I watched the
Master Roshi is going to fight Universe 4 by himself.
Oh, it's something about Master Roshi going to sacrifice himself or something. Yeah, yeah.
No, but he's got a tiny bottle. Smuggle that into the arena.
Someone's
getting fucking sealed up in there.
Yeah. You're not allowed to bring tools, is it? Is he?
is a bottle not a weapon though?
That's right. Well, maybe. I don't know. You were allowed to take drugs. This is technically not a drug. It's technically not be a weapon, so he may be allowed to use it. We'll see.
Well, it's a very small bottle, so it's not like he's going to battle someone with it.
I'm an old man. He needs to have a medicine. I'm not going to deny an old man's medicine, are you? Well, I guess.
They did allow him to bring the sunglasses, and that was actually useful for 18 at one point.
Yes.
So it's like, it's not a weapon, so you're okay. Yeah.
It does feel like just... in the preview that his willpower is failing.
Yeah.
And the Universe 4 seem to be deliberately going after his. Because they're the ones who've spied on everybody else, isn't it? So they know what everybody's like.
Yeah. And it shows some of that spy guy actually in this one, so presumably he's calling the shots. Yeah.
Yeah, I presume he's going to be like the main guy from their side.
Mm.
But who knows, because it didn't turn out that the pink guy was the main guy from Universe 10, was it? It turned out that one guy who was just in the background earlier on was the guy who got some screen time.
Yeah, he was the real contender. Hmm.
Yeah, I really like the fight, though, in this episode.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it switches it up, like you said, several times, so it keeps it interesting.
And, yeah, they graciously decide not to fight each other. They'll save that till the end.
I won't take you out this time, because you helped me out.
Yeah.
That kind of way.
Yes, but one day we'll settle this. We'll find out who's better.
Like, I'm wondering what's the end game for actually settling something with Goku, because it's like, till he wins, is that when he counts it as like, yeah, we're good now?
But then he'll just encourage you to get stronger so he can fight you again. He'll be like, you won't, no, you can get stronger than that.
Yeah.
Even if he kills you, he'll end up bringing you back to life so he can fight you again.
Yep.
Forever war.
Oh, God. Hopefully he doesn't get the wish on that freaking Dragon Balls. I just want fights all the time.
What was in the kind of Robo series where they were like, you know, they were condemned to fight against the same villain over and over all eternity?
Hmm. That sounds like Goku's Paradise, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what Goku's hell would be like.
You're not allowed to fight.
Yeah.
There's no big sticks of meat. I imagine his wife would be there. Oh, he has to spend time at home with the family. That's what it is.
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah. I was going through the old screenshots and I found that one from last year of the bit where we discovered that he'd never kissed Chi-Chi.
Oh, God, yeah. Fucking hell. The real villain of the piece, yeah.
That was an amazing bit. That was an amazing reveal, though, because it's like, the other characters couldn't believe it, and yet, as a viewer, you can believe it.
It's crazy, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea that Vegeta is the romantic of the two of them.
Vegeta's become such a fucking great hero. Oh my God, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's still a prick, but everything he does for the right reasons all of a sudden.
Well, he's called more the equivalent of, like, you know, whenever he's like, the children come up to ask him, and he's just like, "Dad, can we do this thing? Ask your mother."
And somehow he's coming out like as a really good parent figure out of the whole thing. Yeah. Oh my God, he just makes Goku look terrible.
Wait, yeah, I assume is the point.
Which they
really laid into in this Dragon Ball Super.
Mm.
Which again is a lot of it is Toriyama's ideas, but it's the other guy who used to do Dojin anyway, so I think it's almost like fan ideas about Dragon Ball made flesh.
Well, yeah, it's that, and also the fact that the people who've grown up with this are dads themselves now, so it's all about the dads. Yep. Is this show. Yep.
And people who grew up watching the show are now helping to make it.
Yeah, that too. Mm.
Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamiting the Brain. Nine.
Okay. Well, speaking of this, Andre, in our prior discussion, it'll be one of two things. It would either be Chuck Norris Cry Commandos, or it could be a double bill of Martial Arts Mania, which in one podcast, talking about, because they're kind of too short to do one thing on, it'll be Kazuna Ichigeki and Trevor Fist Planet in a double bill. I don't know which it's going to be. So I keep an eye on SuperCinemaster.com to find out, won't you?
I'll guess I'll find out then too.
Yeah. Dwayne, I hope for your sake it's the second one.
Yeah?
Yes.
I'm not a big Chuck Norris guy, so we'll see.
Okay, over on Dynamite in the Brain, we will have a Kitacon review episode with Niall and Ebby. And not Elliot, because he was off somewhere doing something else. And Anthony, of course. We'll be talking about our five favourite things from Kitacon and somehow twisting them into criticism of Kitacon.
It's hopefully constructive. Maybe, you know, a little bit of a bit vitriolic. I'm still a bit tired. But I want things to improve. So I may have been a little bit cutting my remarks, but it comes from a place of love, honestly.
Yes. It's mainly Niall who's cutting, because I'd put all my vitriol in an email I sent the day before the con started.
You're getting it done early. Yeah,
I got it out of my system. Yeah, and then I got even out of my system even further on Facebook, because I put all the swears back in the version on Facebook. Right, we'll be back next week with more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.